F2. Number 22A.
As we say, to sit on their mouth. See, to shut up and say, now, don't say anything anymore. You leave it. You show that you are a better housewife, a better cook, more punctual, always ready, always loving, never depressed, and so on. You just embody the idea of truth, and then we'll see what happens. Then, you know, then the men, after a while, they don't like to give in, but the Christ works on them. And then those husbands begin to say, well, after all, I think I have a better wife than before, and so on, see. And little by little they begin to be interested in it. So it's a silent embodiment, really, of the truth that converts, but not talking. I haven't met in our country one husband that has been converted by talking to them by their wives. It may be different over here. All right, even the best, so the best. But I haven't met one in our country. Perhaps there is one, I don't know. But I know of many, many situations where it isn't. And I'm not well seen at those houses. Until they shut up. Then the men come around and say, why do you never invite Dr. Kapler to our house? Why don't he come around, you see? And then little by little they begin to read my books when the wife is not there, you see, and they come around. So Paul told us not to talk to somebody who doesn't want to listen, but to leave it to them. I think a man would be a fool if he wouldn't like to have a better wife. If he wouldn't like it if the wife is growing in punctuality, in orderliness, in lovingness, in being more balanced, being more joyful. I don't think there is a man who is such a fool that he wouldn't like that. So that's how we can convert those hard-boiled men. Then at the last point he says, well, the way how to spread this idea is to care for others. And that spurns the others to do the same caring, the same mothering, the same loving, and to express the same motherhood. See, it's always showing that which we embody within ourselves has its effect that the world will take it and try to emulate it too, if it's an idea. If it's only something human, then actually it hasn't the Christ power within itself. So that's Titus. And so we can see in those three epistles, which I have taken as one standpoint, see, that his main object really was to say to Timothy and Titus, you are church leaders, you are representatives of the idea of science. Well, what you have to do is first to keep the doctrine pure, first Timothy, then to prove yourself worthy in that purity of the doctrine, and that preserves you, 2 Timothy, and says, and if you do that and really keep the doctrine pure and prove yourself worthy and embody it, that will have the power to spread it. Titus. So you see those three, you see, those three have one common denominator, namely to embody the idea of science, to be an embodiment of the idea of science. And that if they do that, that really establishes scientific Christianity. So, you see, that's really what Jesus did. See, Jesus established Christianity on the fact that he embodied the signs of the Christ in every way he could. not only for himself, not for himself, or he would have halted on the third side of the holy city, where he just would like Enoch and Elijah, that they just said, well, we see what the Christ is doing for us, and the Christ can help us to solve our problems. And so they solved their problems wonderfully. They were translated. But the world didn't have much of it. It didn't solve the world problem. And Jesus went that step further into the signs of it and said, well, I'm not come and to be the Son of God on this world, just to be translated into heaven somewhere in a deserted place, happily and freely, and nobody knows about it, nobody has anything to do about it. He said, no, I'm come into this world, and I'm going to embody the science of man. The science of man. I'm not just going to embody what true man is. Enoch did that. Elijah did that. They embodied the immortality of man. They proved to themselves that man is a spiritual idea, immortal. But Jesus wanted to do something much more. And our age has to do something much more than that. It has to prove that every claim of science, of material science, psychological science, of physical science, natural science, biological science, social science, economic science, financial science, whatever it is, has no power and has no saving effect. The only science that it has a saving effect is the science of God. And so Jesus had to prove that in the face and in the opposition of every other claim, of every other belief. That's what he had to do. That's why he had to undergo the crucifixion, because the crucifixion is considered to be that claim where all the claims of mortal mind are gathered into one. The claims of agony, of pain, and of everything, of breaking the bones and all that, is gathered into one. And he wanted to prove all that as nothing through his science. So he wanted in the world to disprove all the beliefs, the counterfeit of science, to disprove all the beliefs. So Jesus exemplified this teaching of Paul to Timothy and Titus. Now, therefore, we can see that our job, which we have in front of us, is really to see that we are trying to demonstrate the science of man, that we are not just going to try to demonstrate the Christ power over matter. That just would be Christianity. But he wants to show that everything in being lives and moves in accord to a science of being. And so he saw that is the purpose of our life, to represent, to exemplify the science of God, the science of mind, the signs of spirit, the signs of souls, the signs of principles, the signs of life, the signs of truth, the signs of love, against the so-called counterfeit sciences. See, the battle today is between science and sciences, between science and beliefs, between science and all the beliefs and dogmas and doctrines and isms and ologies. If we can disprove that within ourselves, then we give a much higher proof than just prove the superiority of spirit over matter. Jesus said to the Pharisees that they couldn't recognize the signs of the time. It's one of the most difficult things to recognize the signs of the time in every age. But we know also that progress in the world is only be achieved then when we tackle the signs of the time. If we only tackle those problems which are past, we are not pushing the world forward. We are not helping in the evolution of the idea. You see? Only then when we tackle that which is really the main issue of an age, then we are taking part in the most important development of the age. Else we are not. That's why Moses said, don't eat the manna of yesterday. It stinks. He said, don't eat it. Leave it. Eat the manna of today. In other words, give your heart to the signs of the time. Give your heart to that which today is the big issue. And the big issue today is science. Not science versus religion. It is spiritual science versus counterfeit sciences, versus beliefs, dogmas, isms, sciences, theories, and so on. Against beliefs that change so quickly. We have lived in an age where we have seen changing every science so quickly that we can hardly keep up with it, what's going on. Think only 20 years ago, or say 30 years ago, at the beginning of the 30s. Think what medical science was at that time, on what foundation medical science built at that time. Just a blunt matter, flesh and bone, finished. Today, perhaps some do still, but the majority of it don't anymore. Well, what was psychology at that time? What was psychiatry at that time? What was biology at that time? What was physics at that time? What was mathematics at that time? What was chemistry at that time? Chemistry at that time was still taught on those, well, how much? 92 elements. Blunt matter. Today it's taught on the basis of electrons. Quite different. Completely different. Well, we have witnessed that in 30 years, you see, that enormous change, and begin to see that so-called sciences, they are just exchanging one belief for the other, one belief for the other, always being pushed nearer and nearer to that border where they touch the immaterial, that which is spaceless, timeless, matterless, bodiless, comes near to that point. Well, that is the problem of today. And spiritual science is that science which is timeless, spaceless, bodiless, matterless, even human thinking-less, if I know what I mean. It's no more that which the human mind builds up as a belief. It says, no, it is mind science. No more small mind sciences. It's mind science. It's spiritual science. It's the science of soul. It's the science of a universal one principle. Not of many principles and many sciences, of one principle. The science of one life. No more of the science of economic life, of financial life, of military life, of biological life, of medical life, of hygienic life, and life and life and life. It's one life. So, what Paul began to see at that time was what we have to see today. He said, after all, we must be the idea of a science. An idea of science. That's what we must embody. See, man is only the third side of the holy city. But we must take the whole garment. The whole garment. We cannot only embody the Word, we cannot only embody the Christ, can not only embody Christianity as man, but we must also embody the idea of science. So, the law really, which is established here, would show that by accepting our conscious unity, that's on page 155, that by accepting our conscious unity with the science of man, we really serve to establish a universally scientific sense of Christianity. Then only we do that. It's also, therefore, it is showing that we, in our work, you see, within our consciousness, within our work, we really should have our eye on that ball which says, what I want to demonstrate is the science of mind. What I want to demonstrate is the science of spirit. That I want to demonstrate. I don't want to demonstrate a motor car. I don't want to demonstrate that this and that in the human being. I don't want to say anything about it. All those needs, you see. But if we push further, we say, let's demonstrate there is a science of mind. That there is actually a science of mind against all those mind sciences. Let's see that we can demonstrate there is a science of spirit. Namely, that there is a spiritual calculus against the material reckoning, the human reckoning, the material reckoning. Or in so we can see, let's see that we embody really through our conscious unity with soul, the science of soul. Namely, that science which is able to work with spiritual sense, with spiritual understanding, against that so-called dogmas and so on, building on the testimony of the physical senses, solely spiritual sense. Or, see, we can all, what we see more and more also is that what we are establishing is that we become one with the science of principle. Namely, that there is only one science, and not many sciences. Not many sciences. That by establishing within our consciousness, say, that there is only one science, namely that science which is of principle, that science takes hold of all the activities, of all the scientific activities. That it takes hold of the scientific activities in healing, in constructing, in the science of relationships, in the science of health, see, in every way. Why should we be able, say, to use science in business? Only because we can do that, because we see that the science of principle is that which dominates every other activity, every other so-called science. That's why we can use the science of principle for every other science. That's why Mrs. Eddy speaks in her writings about the science in many ways. I don't know it anymore. Once I have looked them up, but she speaks, you see, she really presents the science of government, the science of health, the science of medicine, the science, she even speaks about the science of marriage. See, she speaks about the science of all activities through this one science. So, we can see that the more we embody the science of this one principle, the more that science works scientifically in all fields of so-called sciences. In all fields. Why should, say, medical science have left that matter basis and become more and more psychological? Why? What was at work? Well, it's because one big science is at work, namely that science of mind healing. Well, because there is a science of mind healing at work, every other basis of healing will slowly go and give place to that one signs of mind healing. It isn't because of us. It's because God is mind, and mind has a science. And that is mind healing. Or you could see that in life, for instance, that in the measure as we accept our conscious unity with the fact that there is a science of life, we really begin to establish all that is scientific in life. We begin to establish within in our life a scientific method of living, a scientific way of life, the highway of science, which the Bible speaks, and it begins to establish within us and in others the narrow way of life. See? But it only does that. Religion says, well, you have to go the narrow way of life. But how? But how? We can only do it by first seeing that there is a science of life. And by seeing the science of life, I become conscious that that science of life teaches me the method of life. That's the scientific side of it. The method of life. What is the method of life? The method of life is that you go the way of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love in life. In working out a problem, you go the way, the method of living, by starting with mind, then pondering what through spirit what you have seen in mind. But by pondering what you have seen in mind, something definite comes to your consciousness, soul, you see. But you begin to see, oh, now I got the idea, but that idea is an idea of principle, therefore it begins to govern. So you come to principle, you see. And as it begins to govern our life, it exalts us above the false sense we had about anything. It's the highway of life. And therefore works out the true form of that project, the true form of that problem, and so gives a final solution to it. That's the way of life. You see, it's an ordered, methodical consciousness which is developed within us. That's what our unity with the signs of life does to us and to others. It begins to show the scientific way of life. And so, also in truth, you see, the more we become conscious, so to say, of the science of truth, therefore of a scientific consciousness of truth. What is a scientific consciousness of truth? It's a consciousness where we always take in all the categories into one consistent and coherent whole. That's truth. It's one truth, where all truths are gathered together into one. Then when we begin to see the proposition in its one truth, that has an influence on our activities, on our life activities, on our scientific activities, on our business activities, on our activities in every way as well. Namely, that we also begin to act scientifically. We begin to act more coherently, more systematically, more consistently. You see, we reflect now this one sign of truth. You just think it over. I just can't see how you get it while I'm speaking. I think it must be very difficult. Doesn't matter. As you think about these things, you know, they become so tender, so tangible to consciousness, because they are so scientific. Or, you see, if we would understand the science of love, if we would unite once in our consciousness and say, well, really and truly, what I must see is that science of love. Have you ever heard about anything about science of love? Well, what does it mean? Well, it means that aspect of God as love, which says, there is a science about it. Science is that which unites. It's really the matrix of immortality. See, it's the matrix of immortality. Wherein really, in a matrix, well, that's a matrix, this chart which we had on page 42, that's a matrix, where all standpoints of the whole plane are gathered into one concept. That's the matrix. But it's even more than that. We see in that science of love, we see that within the matrix we have seen that once we have crossed the cornerstone of Romans, that began to evolve within that matrix, within that womb of motherhood, begin to evolve thought to accept 1 Corinthians, then to accept 2 Corinthians, then to see the necessity of Galatians, then to go on, be pushed on to Ephesians, then to Philippians. You see, and so the science of love is a matrix sense within us which just sees that all is woven together into one web of consistency. It's just woven together wherein once one has touched the right beginning, you just can't help see that it will have a right fulfilling. That's the science of love. See, love is that which fulfills, which gives the law of fulfillment. Love is telefinalistic in its very nature. It just starts with a little light and doesn't let go until that little light is fulfilled. Well, if we culture that, you see, in our consciousness, that such a fact is at work in reality, then naturally within our consciousness is awakened something which just works that way. It works that way in our jobs, it works that way at home, it works that way in our relationships, that it just does that it gathers and gathers and gathers everything into one. Yeah. Well, I think I have to stop here.